Mr. Mirren.
Yes, Robert Norris.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm all right.
Well, I'm here at 10. How are you feeling? You feeling like doing an interview?
Yes, we may as well.
Well, good enough. Shall I begin with what you think is on the top of the list, or shall I just start running down stuff I've got?
You begin.
Well, let's see. The most thing I've recently read from you, of course, you passed on some poetry around New Year's, but you also did a poem around the death of Dan Knapp.
Yeah.
And I was looking at the obituary that Nancy McCready, I guess Bob Hansen, or maybe Crystal Freedom did.
Yeah, a nice obituary about the good old days.
Indeed. Anything you want to say about both the good old days and the current wretched days?
Yeah, I ran into a guy on State Street, actually, a couple nights ago in front of the museum where the homeless again tend to congregate, and black guy, been homeless for about 30 years, lives on Social Security, and he was left from the old days, and he said to me, as opposed to me saying to him, he said, we don't seem organized anymore, and that's the truth of it. It was a point many years ago, you were here then in Santa Barbara, remember, in your bathrobe.
Yes.
A strategy you may want to explain to your listeners.
Mm.
Nancy McCready and Bob Hansen actually had started putting together a conversational group of the homeless in the Sunday Park where they had a feeding. And I went to that, as did several other people with homes, and out of that grew an organization called the Homeless Coalition, which was, in fact, astonishingly effective in what it did and tried to do. We established the first shelter here in Santa Barbara long before there were public funds for it, and indeed opposed various egregious laws, got national publicity, embarrassed the city into changing some of its laws, and were perpetually at the city council meetings and county supervisor meetings advocating and actually achieving change of various kinds. It was also organized around an organization called
Legal Defense Center?
Yeah, the Legal Defense Center, run by a guy named Will Hastings, which, if I remember right, was the organization that won homeless people the right to vote by insisting that they could use any location in town as the address required by the law.
Indeed, and in fact, homeless people blocked the freeway at one point to, I guess, I'm not sure whether it was on this issue or on the deaths of homeless people in the mid-80s that this happened, because I wasn't in Santa Barbara at that time.
No, it would have been earlier. With the deaths of homeless people later on, it wasn't so much homeless organizations, but just advocates who organized and showed up at the supervisor meeting insisting on a year-round shelter.
Mm-hmm.
But actually at that point, we insisted on the freedom, what we call the freedom warming centers. Where in cold weather a shelter was provided to people. But all of that, the earlier version, which was the homeless speaking up for themselves, and the somewhat later version, which was advocates speaking up for the homeless, really has pretty much vanished.
What's the situation been like this winter there for both warming centers, shelters? And I think a lot of, in those days, homeless did shelter themselves, as they're doing throughout the country, in the main, I think, in spite of, you know, the huge millions being spent, supposedly, on homeless shelter, navigation centers, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, there are two ways to answer your question. One is this. We did, for a long time, have a public shelter here called Casa Esperanza, largely because of neighborhood opposition to its presence and the presence of the homeless. It was eventually shut down by its board of directors, and the building passed on to a group called PATH, P-A-T-H. I'm not quite sure what that stands for, but they were essentially a recovery program begun and centered in Los Angeles that spread its way up here. Very effective, but very hard-nosed. And at the point that PATH came up here, all of the services provided by the shelter disappeared. Now, I want to go over those services because it's important to understand what they were. They didn't just shelter people at night, but they provided a midday meal, a day center where people could go during the day, and just as importantly, bathrooms and laundry facilities so people could clean their belongings and their clothes and stay clean, and also have a place to go to the bathroom without breaking the law by going outside, which is fairly common for homeless people. Now, when PATH came in, they put an end to all those services.
You remember when that was?
Oh, it would be 4 years ago, I think. I'm only estimating. However, there was a sort of low-humming outcry against the loss of those services, and PATH was not originally very sympathetic to the homeless. However, they did hire a guy named Chuck Flax, who is the son of Mimi and Dick Flax, who you may remember. They were Santa Barbara leftist radicals, not particularly concerned with homelessness, but very active in the community. Their son, Chuck, is concerned about homelessness. He was hired by PATH, and he has done a lot of work, really good work, so that during the winter, PATH will open itself up in bad weather to the homeless. And they have 50 beds available to the homeless, and if you're in their shelter, you can use all their services, and you can stay there all day, so it's not just the night shelter. And that is a new development, and Chuck has been really the best of the local service providers in terms of trying to provide, during bad weather, a place for the homeless to go.
How many nights this winter would you estimate that PATH's been open?
He's open most of the time. And indeed, if you are homeless and you want to go to PATH for 30 days, you can easily apply to be in their program, and they will let you stay there for 30 days and try to get you started on the disability process, try to get you on the housing lists. In other words, they are the most efficient service providers we have in town. And you can get off the streets at least for 30 days. And as I said, they're open at the drop of a hat, according to their own lights.
Are there storage facilities available here in Santa Cruz? A group called the, a man named Brent Adams has opened up a day and night storage open to every homeless person in town, where he simply has a situation where he provides free storage. He doesn't get any funding from the city. He's concerned about establishing it as a city program, but they aren't interested, so he's...
No, we do not. We do not have, and I will get to that in the course of this little peroration, but no, we don't have that.
I mention that because when you're talking about PATH, I wondered if an individual wants to go into PATH, do they store his stuff, or does he have to abandon it?
I believe they will store his stuff. I do know that if you're living in a car, they will let you park the car in their parking lot, which is a big deal for people who live in cars.
Yeah, hear you.
Another problem, which I don't think they solve, and which I saw confronted head-on by a wonderful shelter up in... Northern California. It's in Sacramento, called Loaves and Fishes, which was run, and I think is still run, by folks who came out of the Cesar Chavez farm worker movement. They provide not only a place to store your stuff, but shelter for animals, which is a very big deal for many homeless people. That is, if they have to go into a program or a shelter and are required to give up their animals, they will not do it. And the cost in Santa Barbara for keeping your animal at an animal shelter is prohibitive, right? And I have not been able yet to get the supervisors to allow the homeless, when they need to put their animals into the animal shelter at no cost.
You know if the census or any other agency has figured out what percentage of the homeless population actually has animals?
No. I know women like to have them for protection, right? They make them feel safer when they're out on their own. But I do not know how many people have them. Many people living in cars have animals, that much I know.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite common.
I have to ask this, although, you know, it's a familiar question.
Yes.
Any estimates of the homeless population in Santa Barbara?
You know, the counters say, the only figure I've seen is that there are 1,100 people in need of immediate housing. Now, we're getting sort of off the track, but let me talk to you for a minute about the numbers of homeless people, and then I'll get back to where I was before, because I don't want to lose the track of it.
Okay.
But here's the problem. The housing advocates have counted, they say, the number of people on the streets in need of immediate and supportive housing, and their figure is 1,100, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's in Santa Barbara and its region and not the county as a whole, okay, but only the city. However, and this is very interesting, Chuck Flax, who I mentioned to you before, who I think of as a really good man, reported to me with an email that the county schools count up the number of homeless children. And this is an interesting number. The number they use is that we have 10,000 homeless people in the county of Santa Barbara, homeless children in the county of Santa Barbara. But here's how they count. They will count children belonging to a family that lacks its own housing unit. So that will mean people with staying in other people, people with on someone else's couch. Usually, I think, to a large extent, immigrant families who bunk in with other families or with relatives. The reason I mentioned that is, if you take the figure of 10,000 homeless kids and try to figure out how many homeless families we have in the county, what you see is, in terms of the need for housing, there's this immense backlog of people who need housing that they do not have. You understand?
Oh, very well. Santa Cruz, similar.
Right. So when you talk about who needs housing or how many homeless people there are, it depends how you count, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there are 1,100 people on the street in need of immediate housing, but if you're serious about housing people, there are thousands of people who need to be housed and require affordable housing who don't have it.
Now, Santa Cruz has been called the most expensive county, perhaps second to San Francisco in the country, for housing. How does Santa Barbara stack up?
We're high up there, too. We're one of the most expensive areas in the country.
And you mentioned in past conversations the destruction of single-room occupancies as solutions for people who are low-income or homeless, or temporary solutions. And the destruction of that. How have rents been looking in the last 4 years in Santa Barbara? Do you have a sense on...
Yeah, they rise up. So you're looking at, we don't have SROs anymore, right? Those are all gone. And they used to be $500 a month when you and I were in town together, right? Now, there's an important part to that, but the studio apartments and one-bedroom apartments, I would say, are a minimum of $1,000 or $1,200 a month, okay? Now, the important thing about that is that prices them out of the reach of people on disability, right? And this is something to pay attention to, though it's forgotten by most politicians. The payments for disability, which are somewhere between $800 and $900 a month for most people, have really not budged in the last 20 years. And that means that people who live on disability are totally unable on their own to find any kind of housing. Right? Now, that development has to do both with the cost of housing and the fact that disability has not moved appropriately to provide people with a living minimum source of income.
Any sense of disability organizing or tenant organizing in Santa Barbara?
No. periodically the idea of rent control comes up, and it's been on the ballot once or twice, but it's always been roundly defeated, even though we are a liberal and democratic community, supposedly.
Are you a tenant majority community?
Actually, we probably are, but you know, the argument about state control, the bad effects of rent control, et cetera, usually win the day. Now, before we get in that direction, let me go back to one other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And those are Section 8 vouchers for housing, right? As you know, these are provided by the federal government and to some extent by the state, and they augment the amount people are able to pay for housing. Mm-hmm. However, HUD has never been generous enough with these vouchers or financing for these vouchers, and it's gotten even worse under Trump. So that in our town, you will probably know the figures for your town, in our town, the wait for a Section 8 voucher can run 6 to 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have a little bit of affordable housing, not very much, and we have these the attempts to subsidize the amount people pay for rent, but that is so grudging in terms of the total amount available that there's this very long wait for vouchers, and also most landlords won't accept vouchers, which makes it hard to use a voucher even when you get hold of it, because most landlords would prefer to rent to people with more money.
There's a lot of babble at the state level and even locally about, you know, pathways to housing, housing first, affordable housing, yak, yak, yak. And there's been some large grants, supposedly,
yes,
from the state coming to here. But, of course, ironically, in Santa Cruz, winter shelter has been cut back.
Exactly. That's the point I was going to make to you. At this point in time, and I've tried to deal with them, I just had a meeting. I'd been making so much noise about shelter that people with who work with United Way, whose main interest in housing the poor, called a meeting that I could attend and so I could discuss with other people the need for shelter. What I found was their interest in theoretically housing people was so pronounced they weren't interested in any interim solution like shelter for people who are presently on the streets waiting for housing.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened here is that when the feds decided to put their money into housing, almost every organization that deals with the homeless became a housing organization.
Yep.
And they ceased to concern themselves with the day-to-day problems of people on the street. Right? So the organization I run, and which I've run for a long time, called the Committee for Social Justice, is about the only one that deals with emergency situations. And there's no money here for people who get in trouble at the end of the month because their disability checks have run out. There's no movement here for temporary shelter. In point of fact, sad to say, about a year ago, there appeared in our local newspaper a letter from several of the people who had run Casa Esperanza, that is the day-to-day homeless shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And in that letter, they suggested that shelter actually enabled homelessness and therefore was a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard that,
right?
One.
Yeah, but that's scary. I mean, that's really hard to believe that people who care about the homeless are writing that we ought not to have a shelter because it encourages people to stay on the street.
Isn't this based upon the desire to coax funding for their projects based upon their theory that they can't get it for shelter, so they're going to try to get it for so-called pathways to housing that doesn't exist?
Yeah, that's part of it, but I've actually run into several supposed advocates for the homeless who believe that that any kind of help for the homeless enables them to stay homeless.
Did they say why, if it was true, their views had changed?
They haven't said why. However, you must remember that underneath everything, ours is a very puritanical nation, right?
Yeah.
With this great undertow of belief that, which in some ways is good, you know, that if you want to make something of yourself, you can, and if you haven't made something of yourself, it must be your own fault.
Yeah.
It must be a choice, right? Now, for anybody who's dealt with homeless people to really believe that is almost beyond belief, but there are people who still believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And how can that be? If you live on disability, the state's already decided that you can't function and work, right? And they're pretty strict with that designation. So if they say you're disabled, you really are disabled, you got $800 in your pocket. How the... Excuse me, I was about to use the wrong kind of language.
Watch your fucking language. Okay?
Yeah, thank you. How the fuck are you supposed to take care of yourself on $800 a month? It's beyond belief, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, we know, you and I know who's homeless, people whose lives have been screwed up one way or another. There may be a few freeloaders in the sense that you and I both know there's guys who like to live on the margins of society and go from place to place as they can and try to make do. They're sort of outdoors people, but they live in the city, and they try to live on their own wits, right? I get that.
Mm-hmm.
There's also alcoholics and people strung out on drugs. You know that, too. But the notion that we're going to make everybody better by not helping them is the one that beggars belief.
Plus, it's so disproportionate if you consider the situation with bankster fraud and foreign wars. I mean, it's huge.
I understand.
Yeah, I mean...
I understand this, right? And
mm-hmm.
Look, when people come to me for help, I don't make them fill out forms, and I ask them what the story is. And half the time, I know they're lying to me, but we help them anyway, right? We help them anyway because they need help.